Okay, the last presentation for the first half of the morning session is by Steve Haig, Texas A&M, and the title of his presentation is Screening Methods to Determine Drought Tolerant Cotton. Steve.
Thank you. Well, I'll try not to hold people up from break for too long, but I did want to talk about some methods that I've been trying out to try to determine what drought-tolerant cotton is. In defining drought-tolerant cotton, you know, there's a lot of different ways to define this. We could just say, is it just the basic survival of the plant during extreme drought stress? Could it be the plant being able to thrive during drought stress? And this is probably a little more accurate. And it goes into terms of water use efficiency. We can measure how much biomass per water unit that is being produced there. But really, as cotton breeders and cotton producers, they're most interested in how much fiber per water unit they can extract from that field. And so we want a plant that can minimize stress during water deficiencies and obtain the greatest amount of yield and highest fiber quality during periods of drought stress. So I've employed a few different screening methods to see if we can get at some of these questions. First, I employed a seedling drought tolerance experiments. I looked at leaf temperatures in the field. And then finally, field performance during a drought period or a dry land situation, and that would include yield and fiber data. With a seedling drought tolerance, I looked at seedling drought mortality, and this was sort of an idea that I hybridized between Dr. B.B. Singh, who was a cowpea breeder in Africa for many years, that he was using it to screen cowpeas, and then also the work that had been going on there in the Cotton Improvement Lab with seedling drought tolerance. So I was planting, what I did is I planted two seeds per container here, and as soon as they emerged, if I got both seeds emerged, well then I pulled one out, and so I'd have one plant per container. And then I allowed these plants to grow until almost all of them had about one true leaf, and then I would pull the water, and in a few days they started to dry down and eventually die. But what's tricky on here is a lot of times they can look very dead, and then you can put water on there and they have sort of a Lazarus effect, they come back to life. And so you have to sort of get a standardized picture of what's dead and what's not dead and be consistent from one day to the next. And so you begin your counts when they start dying. I could have actually called this, flipped it around and called it a survival curve, but since I'm a pessimist, I decided to go with mortality. And so I selected three lines or three cultivars that we felt like had pretty good drought tolerance. This would be Tamcott 22, Delta Pine 491, and Fibromax 832 as commercial checks. And then I pulled lines from F4 populations that looked like they had good lint percent and good fiber qualities, and they all had unique pedigrees behind them. And what I saw here was that the commercial checks that we thought were drought tolerant were indeed, they held on a little longer than the experimental lines in this first experiment. And so I decided to repeat the experiment with some different experimental lines, again with unique pedigrees there. And again, the checks, they tended to drift down here and seemed to hang on a little bit longer than some of the experimental lines, except for this one line, this X26, and it was nestled right in there between Tamcott 22 and Delta Pine 491 for the duration of, the death period, I guess. And so with this evidence, looking at seedling drought tolerance, you know, it was fairly easy to classify the commercial checks as being drought tolerant, and and this one experimental line, X26, is being drought tolerant. So then I moved on to field experiments, and I wanted to measure leaf temperature. So I talked to some people in the wheat breeding program, and they've been using leaf temperature to identify drought tolerance, and it's worked very well for them. So I went to the Granger website and ordered me a $90 infrared thermometer, and I had a lot of fun with it. And sampling the plants, the protocol that I played around with it for a half an hour until I figured out, you know, I'm getting some results that I like here, because there's not really anything written down for cotton as far as measuring leaf temperature as a selection criteria. And so what I decided to do is take measure the uppermost leaf on the plant that was non-waxy, fully developed, mature, and try to target plants that were equally spaced, because what I saw is if you had a plant that was sitting out there by itself, it didn't have a lot of competition, was a lot cooler than those plants that had a normal plant population. In fact, it was so drastic, you could take the thermometer and shoot a field that was under dry land production, walk across a turn row into a field that was under irrigation, and you'd see a 10 to 20 degree difference with the irrigated being much cooler. And so what I decided to do is I'd sample 6 plants per plot with this infrared thermometer. And you still, regardless of that, you still saw a range here. But during the analysis, I actually analyzed the subsampling and found that there was very little interaction there. And so you could just go with the mean of the plot with those 6 plants. So it gave fairly repeatable results there. But like I said, there are factors that can affect leaf temperature. The number one factor is operator error. And so you had to be very careful, and I'm very prone to a lot of errors, so that's probably the biggest error at that point. Time of day, I always went out there 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon in the heat of the day when the plants were under a lot of drought and heat stress at that time. You could see differences in soil moisture and types if your soil was, you know, a little bit different. If it had a higher water content, you're going to see less drought stress, of course. And then also plant diseases and pests, they can contribute to these higher temperatures. Plant spacing was a big one. Like I said, the plants with less competition were typically cooler. Leaf type was another factor. Of course, Fibromax 832 has the ochre leaf, and it was always hotter, and I think a lot of that may have to do with the lack of stomates per plant. It just doesn't have the somatoconductance that you'd see in a normal leaf cotton, and this agrees with a lot of literature in measuring leaf temperature with ochre leaf plants. So an ochre leaf is going to tend to be a little hotter than a normal leaf plant. And then finally, when we're trying to get out as plant breeders, is what are the genotype differences among these lines? And so I know this slide's a little busy right here, but what I want to focus on. The ground temperature at College Station was 140 degrees, at Thrall it was 150, and Pecos 127, so some pretty hot ground temperatures at that point. And the other thing that I want to point out, what were the hottest, which is not what you want. Fibromax 832, the ochre leaf was up there and it was very warm, and then these experimental lines. And down here on the cool side, Tamcot 22, X26 and WC41, and I feel pretty good about this leaf temperature, because if you look at the CVs, 3.4, 1.9, and a 3.2, pretty good, pretty low CVs for an experiment like this. So to classify lines as being drought tolerant based on leaf temperature, I feel fairly comfortable ranking Tamcot 22 and X26. Also as being having a high degree of drought tolerance according to that test. Another parameter that that I think is important towards drought tolerance is what can that plant produce in terms of fiber quality under severe drought stress. And looking at fiber quality here, we see that in the experimental lines were intentionally selected because they had good fiber qualities. But this X26, a 1.19, a 1.24, and a 1.15 across those 3 locations. And these other 2 experimental lines also were able to stay in the upper echelon across locations there. So I feel pretty fairly confident that we could classify those as being as having high drought tolerance according to fiber quality. And again, you see this X26 being high in all 3 screening methods. And then lastly, the yield performance, both at Thrall and Pecos, and of course these are dryland locations, and those of you who are familiar with Pecos, Texas may be saying, how in the world did the produce that much cotton in a dryland situation in Pecos, an area that typically receives 8, maybe 9 inches of rainfall per year? Well, Pecos received a considerable amount of rainfall at the best possible time for the cotton crop from the remnants of Hurricane Dolly. And so I was expecting to be the lowest yielding area, and it was just opposite. So it made fairly decent dryland cotton there. Not something I'd recommend every year for growers, though. But out of this test, you can see that not a lot of differences there. The CVs were quite high, which is pretty common when you start running dry land tests, that it's hard to have a low CV in those situations. But you do see some trends between locations. The commercial checks trended to the top. And this X26, again, it was one of the higher yielders in both locations. And so with that that piece of information, you put all the data together and you start to see, okay, X26, it was it seemed to be have high drought tolerance through all four screening methods. But also another important key to this is what you can eliminate. You could probably discard WB24 and Z23 and even WB37 as not being very drought tolerant, because a cotton breeder many years ago told me it's not what you keep, it's what you throw away. So with that, I'll be willing to entertain any questions, but I know everybody wants to go to break too. So.
I think we'd better move on. Apologize.
Just a couple things we need to take care of.
Okay.
First of all, while we've got everybody here, I think this would be a good time to kind of go ahead and move on with our business meeting, really with the sole purpose of trying to select a chairman for year after next. So with that, I'd like to open it up for nominations. Does anybody have anyone? Oh, come on.
Who's chairman next year?
Pingchi will be the chairman next year. Yes, and preferably the pattern has been that we alternate between a university or USDA person and then an industry. So really, this time would be a good time for an industry person to be nominated. Do we need to look around the room and see who's not here? That seems to be that's how I got this job. Anybody at all? Come on. Who?
Genoa.
Genoa. Genoa. Do we have a second for Genoa? He doesn't seem too interested. Well, it would be my recommendation, you know, given we've got a bigger person this time, that it would either be a Monsanto Delta Pine or someone from Phytogen. I'm sorry? Do I have a second? All right, everybody, all in favor?
Yeah.
It passes. Good deal. And one more thing before we go into the break, I want to go ahead again, since we've got folks here, and go ahead and announce the winners of the graduate student paper competition. I don't know if everyone's here or not, but we will try to get everybody together probably at the end of the break with some photographers, but I'll go ahead and announce the winners now. Third place was Frank Groves. Second place, we have Benjamin Beyer. And first place, Nia Kathari. So congratulations to these folks.